The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Sing it. Sing it, Mariah. Sing it right to Chris Hine so he feels it in his heart and feels merry this Christmas season. Chris Hine of the Star Tribune. There is no bigger Mariah Carey fan that I've ever met in my entire life than this man. It is your time, my brother. It is your time for Mariah to be at the top. How are we doing?
That's good. Yes, 15th week at number one. We are going for the Billboard all-time record of 20 weeks. We'll see. I don't think we're going to hit it this holiday season, but stay tuned for next holiday season. She'll get her rightful record back.
Serious question for you, Chris, though.
Yeah.
You know pop music extremely well. I casually enjoy pop music, but I like music. What is it about this song? What is it about? I mean, I understand why people love Mariah Carey. She is one of the great artists in pop history. But this song, it just captivates the nation every year. Why?
I can't really explain it. I think it's the energy behind it, the force with which she sings. I think one of the things I've had about a theory I've had about music is that the 60s girl group sound sounds good at any point in time in history.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what that has. I think people love that sound, and it always tends to come back around. You know, the career of like someone like Meghan Trainor is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just has nostalgia. It has little bits sprinkled throughout its composition in terms of the chord changes that remind you of old time Christmas songs while sounding 60s and modern all at the same time. I don't know how they pulled it off, but they did.
It does. And it does feel like it would cross enjoyers of different genres. Like it's got a good vibe to it. It's got a good beat. Like even if you like rock and roll, it's kind of rock and rolly. If you like pop, if you're playing really slow Christmas songs, for me, chestnuts roasted on the I've never seen anyone roast anything on an open fire. So I don't know, man. Like maybe it's a little more relatable. It's a great tune. So a good month for you as always. But I have no transition from that to basketball. So let's just talk basketball.
Let's do it.
Here's a weird thing that keeps happening with basketball is the beginning of the season. Teams change so many players and everything else that there always has to be these adjustments. And we cannot figure out what any team's going to be until we get to about December. Christmas used to be the day where we started paying attention to what teams really were. But that's not how society works now. So, Chris, explain to me the evolution of the Wolves and their chemistry and coming together with Julius Randle and where they stand in that now.
You know, I've always, in scouting circles, you always kind of ask, like, how long do you give, like, a major shift to the roster to gel and work, right? And I've heard various opinions about this over the years, and it typically falls between the 20 and 40 game mark when you have a major change like this, right? So I don't think it was any surprise, just for me, being an observer of the league for, you know, the last 7 years as a beat writer, that by about game 20, the Wolves still hadn't figured things out, right? And that's kind of when this whole mini crisis happened, and this four-game losing streak, and Anthony Edwards calling the team out. That was right around game 20, right? And so, in a weird way, it was almost, if there's a silver lining to what happened, it's that it happened this early in the season in some ways. So you can kind of have some of these hard conversations, these truth telling, you know, sort of moments, and you can try to figure out what's wrong, what works, what doesn't. And you can move in a direction as an organization. It's better to have that conversation at game 20 than it is in the middle of March, which sometimes can happen. So, you know, I think you saw them rebound from that. They got back to a defensive style of play that's a mix of what they were doing before Rudy Gobert got here, plus with what they've done since he's been here. It's worked over the last couple of games. And, you know, I think once you start winning a couple of games, as Dante DiVincenzo said, people stop talking and, you know, winning is the ultimate revenge. It shuts people up. It brings up the mood in the locker room, and you know, you can build on what you're doing well instead of trying to figure out what you're not doing well.
I also think Chris Hine, Star Tribune, joining me here, Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake, and he is on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. I also think that just with the way we operate in the social media universe, and I don't mean to sound like an old guy here, but everybody wants everything right now, and every bad game or mistake is such a catastrophe in the world of social media, which just is not actually the case over an 82-game basketball season, but it feels that way. You lose to Portland, and it's just, what is going on? It's a wreck. But that's not how it usually really works. I mean, most teams don't just win 70 games, and especially now with teams kind of pacing themselves for long playoff runs, I just felt like it was such a massive overreaction. Like, they will have time to figure it out. But I also think from Anthony Edwards' perspective, he had this big old guy in Karl Anthony Towns, who he grew up with in this league, and they knew how to talk to each other, and they joked around with each other, but with seriousness, as you wrote about, mixed in, where he would tell Kat, hey, just shoot the ball, man, or whatever it might need to be. He's got new teammates now, and also, I feel like a new leadership role within this group that is different in that dynamic without Karl Anthony Towns.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
It is, and he's been more vocal of a leader over the last season and a half or so. It really started last season that he became more of a vocal presence. Before, he would always defer to some of the veterans on the team. And listen, when you're 19, 20, 21 years old, it's hard to be a leader on an NBA team, especially when there are guys in their late 20s and early 30s who have been in the league and been there and done that. But he's in season five now. He's not new to the league anymore. And he's not new to the dynamics of an NBA locker room. And he's a very emotionally intelligent person. And he knows how to handle people and what motivates them and, you know, how to sort of deal with different dynamics with different players. He's very good that way. Teammates and coaches will tell you that. And so I think you're starting to see that emerge to the forefront this season where he's taking more of the reins. It's been a natural progression, a natural process. He hasn't wanted to force it in recent years, but now he's starting to have more of this voice. He's navigating these dynamics with different teammates in the locker room. And at the end of the day, he's always going to be a positive influence for his teammates. That's always been who he is from a young age to now. He's always one to uplift and encourage his teammates. And so that gives him the room and the ability to say what's on his mind every so often when he does have, you know, a critical word or a piece of advice to give, because in all other moments, he is so positive and so reinforcing.
And he also does the dance of being pretty blunt with you guys as the reporters, and sometimes extremely blunt with you guys without seemingly manipulating his teammates. And maybe that's just because he walks the walk. But that growth of him and maturation of him as the true franchise player, he is not sharing this with anybody now. I think it's something that I wanted to see how he handled. And I feel like he did a really good job of picking the right moment of, we are down and somebody, the superstar, needs to step up and say something. And he was able to do that. I want to know how you think that Julius Randle fits into this, because the New York folks either loved Julius Randle and thought he got a bad rap, or they said he was selfish and took too many bad 2-point shots. His numbers this year, though, are pretty sound. How do you feel like he's fit into the mix?
I think he's fitting in, you know, I think about as well as you can maybe expect. He's been asked to change a little bit. He's been asked to play, you know, a little more demanding defense, and we've seen some hiccups with that at times, certainly. But I think one thing you notice when he plays offense is yes, he has these long possessions sometimes, right? And sometimes it can be frustrating to watch. I get it. It's dribble, dribble, dribble. But there's always, I wouldn't call it selfish, because he is looking to try to set up teammates out of this and try to draw attention and try to look for the right moment to deliver a pass. And that's one of the things that Chris Finch spoke often about in the preseason was, you know, the way Julius plays, it does set up open looks for teammates. So I think he's fit in that way. I just have wondered at times about that style versus the way the Wolves want to play offense, which is more of a ball movement, share the floor, share the ball kind of thing. And I think at times that has been a bit of a clunky fit. I thought the other night in Los Angeles against the Clippers, Julius played a really strong first quarter, and I think it was because he was very decisive. He was letting it rain from three-point range, and he hit a bunch early in that game. And I thought that was maybe the snapshot, that the best that he looked kind of in the context of how the Wolves want to play. The other thing I think, you know, what was an interesting development on Friday night was, you know, Naz Reid closed that game over Randall. And so I think that's sort of the approach Chris Finch has to take moving forward, is if Naz Reid on a given night is going to be a better matchup or just has it going better than Julius does that night, you know, I don't think he should play the hierarchy late in games. I think he should probably go with Naz Reid if that's what's going to be working. Like the politics of contract status and starting status should go out the window. It's fine to have Julius start, but again, if Naz Reid is the better choice down the stretch of a game, you know, I think that's a button Chris Finch should probably push from now on.
Well, also, when Naz Reid gets hot, I feel like there is just nothing like it in the sport. It's when Naz Reid gets hot, it just seems like he absolutely can't miss. The Randall thing, I guess I wonder about. There, Anthony Edwards was saying something last year. He was using a phrase that really stuck with me and I thought was a good one, where he was talking about how the ball would come back to him. I think he said this, right? If he got rid of the ball quickly and he moved without the basketball, that it would just find him on the way back, and he didn't always have to make it happen off the dribble. And I wonder if Julius Randle can adopt this a little more himself, because when you have an unselfish player like Mike Conley and Edwards, who last year I thought when the light went on was when he started getting rid of the ball faster and then letting the offense progress. If Randle does that, I think he could be a really, really good player for this team more consistently. But if he kind of sticks with his old style like he had in New York for so long, it might just have those clunky moments.
I think you're right, but it's just so hard to change so quickly,
right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Like, especially because he did miss, like, the second half of last season with an injury. So, you know, this run, this 20-plus games that they've played so far is the first basketball he's played in a long time. So, you know, I think he spent a little while just getting back up to speed in the first, you know, 10 to 15 games or so. And now it's been more about, like, where do you fit in stylistically? You know, how can you mesh your style with the Wolves' style of play? And, you know, there are positives, especially when you look at the numbers. I think similar to Rudy Gobert, I think just when Julius makes a mistake, or, you know, it just looks bad, right? Like, I think he suffers from the same problem that Rudy Gobert does in terms of the perception with the fan base. When it doesn't go right for him, you know, and it's a bully ball possession and he tries to zip it out to the wing and the pass goes over somebody's head, or he takes a shot and it doesn't even come close on a fadeaway from 13 feet, you know, like those that looks bad, right? More than Anthony Edwards pulling up for a three and just missing it, right?
Right.
Like same result, but Julius's looks much worse to the observer's eye than Anthony Edwards is missing a three-point shot. So I think he suffers a little bit from that, is that when he does make a mistake, it just makes you feel a certain type of way watching the game.
Okay, Chris, tell me, last thing for you, if you agree with this take. So I know it's the middle of the season and we're just, you know, there's always going to be ups and downs and everything. But looking at this upcoming schedule, to me it feels like this is the time, my friends. They've got the Lakers at home. Then a few days later, they've got New York at home, which is going to be a humongous game. And then Golden State at home. There's just a run here of games that are going to be good opponents or emotional returns to Minnesota for Karl Anthony Towns, where they kind of have an opportunity to maybe gain some momentum. I don't know if you believe in momentum of a team in the middle of a season or not, but I kind of feel like there are turning points for teams, and this might be an opportunity to be one.
I do to a certain extent. I definitely think that there are stretches of confidence and good play. I do think sometimes the schedule, especially the travel aspect of it, does a lot to kill momentum, especially when you're traveling a lot. But I think you're right. I think this is an important stretch coming up because it is a lot of high profile home games before they head back out on the road over Christmas. And I think they feel pretty good with where they're at. I think the last stretch of games here did a lot to boost their confidence. Even after they lost on Sunday, to your point, you know, fans may have been disappointed and really reacting to that. They do anytime they lose, but the vibe, quote unquote, in the locker room was fairly good because it's like they're coming into a little break here, and I think they've really figured out an identity and a way that they want to play defense, especially, and they feel like, you know, they're not searching for answers. They feel like they have a lot of the answers that they were searching for a few weeks ago. They just had a bad night on Sunday night. So I think right now they're in a good place to enter this stretch of the schedule because they figured out how they are stylistically on the defensive end of the floor. Offense, I still think, is very much a work in progress and still will be, but that was kind of what last year's team was. It was a defensive first team, and if the offense wasn't quite there on a given night, they could still beat teams with defense, and that's how they won a lot of games last year, and I think they're getting back to that formula now.
And I'm always curious about just how the fans are adopting their team and what the vibes are like, as you mentioned, inside the building. I kind of pay attention to this with the Vikings and like, what's the stadium like? That LA, New York, Golden State, all opportunities for the roof to blow off that place. And when it's hopping, it is insane in there. So I will be paying attention to your work, as always, the Star Tribune. And all I want for Christmas is hoops. Chris, that's all I want. All I want is hoops. So enjoy your Mariah Carey-driven holiday season, and I appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on, dude. Good to catch up with you.
Appreciate you having me on, as always. Thank you.
Certainly. Chris Hines, Star Tribune, on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brathan, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brathan wherever you get your podcasts.